Welcome to A Moment of Bach, where we take our favorite moments from the composer's vast musical output, just a minute's worth, or even a few seconds of a short chorale, and show you why we think they are remarkable. We are your hosts, Christian and Alex Giebert. Today's moment is from a standalone Bach chorale, BWV 469, Ich stehe an deiner Krippen hier. I stand at your manger here, is the English translation. That's right, it's a Christmas song today, but since we at A Moment of Bach typically don't post in December, I thought we'd bring you this really nice Christmas tune and give you a little bit of the interesting background on the tune itself. First of all, the text. I stand at your manger here.
Ich steh an deiner Krippen hier.
O Jesus, my life. I have come to bring and present you the things that you gave to me. Receive them. They're my spirit and mind, heart, soul, my courage. Take it all and let it please you. The idea of bringing gifts to Christ, of course, is the famous version of that is the wise men, who in the account of the Gospel from Matthew brought gifts of frankincense, myrrh, and gold to the young Jesus Christ on what is called Epiphany. So there's been a lot of poetic ink written on pages talking about the Epiphany because it is a natural metaphor for service of the church. For the star, it would be like following the star. It would be ways we can follow the light of Christ in the Christian church, things like that. And these things found their expression a lot in the Baroque era with Bach. He's got some Epiphany music. But here we have a simple expression, which is sung and played very beautifully here by a small trio. What we have here is a solo voice, soprano range probably, well, mezzo-soprano, I guess. It's just a simple range, actually. It's just a simple hymn tune.
Listed as a soprano.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be.
And that is sung by Viola Blache. And then the basso continuo, the bass part, is covered by a viola da gamba, which is, of course, a period instrument, played here by Minika van der Velden, who is a performer that we actually featured just a few weeks ago on the Viola da Gamba Sonata. And then an interesting lute-like instrument called the theorbo, played here by Mike Ventros.
Theorbo, depending on your language, you know.
The role being played by the theorbo here is that of a chordal instrument. He's filling in, actually at the beginning here, he's playing the melody, right? Before the soprano comes in. So he's giving us that melody. And then once the soprano comes in, now he's gonna take the chordal stuff, which is the extrapolation, or sometimes known as the realization of the figured bass line that is written in the music. So what we have from Bach here is just a simple melody with words and a bass line. So you might be wondering, what is this melody? It doesn't sound very familiar. And that's because it's not that familiar. And this text, which may be a little more familiar to you, but maybe not, it's also pretty obscure. This text is usually set to a different tune, and that is the tune Nun freut euch, which is a classic Lutheran tune, which was probably composed by Luther, although I don't think that's for sure. Definitely the original hymn text of that tune is a famous one. In English, it's known as Dear Christians, One and All Rejoice. It has 15 verses, and those are all written by Martin Luther. The text is. That's just a classic old Lutheran chorale and tune. But that tune is not as sweet as this tune. That tune is a little bit more forceful and commanding and almost military-like, I would say, right? In that tune, you have a very striking opening of intervals of a fourth. Dun, 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 dun. It's really
Star Trek.
Yeah, na na na. Yeah, it's a striking tune because of those leaps, those interesting leaps. And this one is the opposite of that. This one is very stepwise. It is very sweet and peaceful. And of course, what we know about Bach, he sets the text with the music that is appropriate. And here, he writes his own music for this text. Probably not intending this to be used for anything special. Maybe it was just for a class or a prayer devotional thing or what. Who knows? It probably was never even used in church. This was just something that he wrote down that maybe he never thought would ever be seen. But it paints this text perfectly. As you can imagine, there are a lot of verses. In fact, there are also 15 verses of this, and this was written by Paul Gerhardt, the text was. Huh. Yeah, another famous Lutheran hymn writer of hymn texts, especially. And it's really very beautiful, the poetry here. Typically, as we look at English translations of German poetry, they don't always sound as poetic in English. I mean, that's typical of any poetry. It's hard to really translate. But here's a little phrase that I really like, and this is a literal translation. So lass mich doch dein Kribblein sein. So let me be your cradle. Komm, komm und lege bei mir ein. Come, come and live with me. Dich und all deine Freuden. You and all your joys. And that's how they choose to end this. That is actually the 14th verse. They skip around a little and they don't choose to sing all 15 here, but instead they end there. I always love any kind of poetry about the manger and metaphor about the manger, about this, because the Epiphany story is beautiful, and the coming to Christ and bringing him your offering, maybe that offering is the way that you give your spiritual gifts toward furthering the kingdom of God. You know, it's different in every culture, it's different in every type of church and how they use these metaphors. But here, I really like this one. I like these ones that are a little more personal, that zoom in all the way into the stable and the manger and all of that. And talking about Christ being laid in the manger because there was no other place for him to be. And he was in a humble place in that way. And that Christ living in me, says this poet, right, Paul Gerhardt, let me be his cradle. I want him to live with me and that I would have him in my heart. I would say that in most versions of Christianity, that is a goal of the Christian here on earth, to have Christ in your heart, right? I mean, that's like a big part of Christianity. Or maybe more properly put would be to embody what Christ is like. I think we might have all, at least Americans, we all hear this famous phrase, what would Jesus do, right? That's like a thing that we say in modern American Christianity a lot. But I always find those types of poetry a little more special.
And this is, at least the first verse, is less like having Jesus in your heart and more giving your heart as a gift, as in one of the gifts that people brought Jesus when he was born, like the wise men.
Right.
And in this case, I come and offer you, accept, Lord, my heart and soul, mind, spirit, strength, accept it all. It's like an offering.
Right. So this would be an appropriate song to sing as an offertory in a church service. And I think the sort of humble staging of this beautiful video here, the humble instrumentation of it, right? It's very simple. Lends itself well to the humble text here. So this is what I love about Bach. We can look at something like this that is pretty obscure in terms of Bach's work. Also in terms of just anybody knowing this hymn at all, like we said, pretty obscure. We can take something like that, but we can still find something absolutely stunningly beautiful in it. And even though it's simple, the simplicity of it perfectly paints the text. So it need not be anything more than what it is here.
And musically speaking, it is two lines of music, or two parts of music. and exactly. one verse is written out. It's the melody written out with the words underneath, and then the bass line written out under. And that's it.
There's right, and every nothing verse, else. Yeah, every verse is presumably the same setting. He doesn't have any other harmonizations for any other verses no. or anything. It's just this.
No inner parts are written out. No harmonies are written. Chords have to be deciphered from the bass line, as is customary in Baroque music that only has a bass line written. And that's what the Teoboist, don't know what you'd call,
Teoboist, yeah.
is
however
doing.
However you say that.
However you say it.
Yeah.
That's what he is doing, is rendering those harmonies
yeah.
from the bass line only. It's very simple, the music. But even being simple, it has a really nice interplay between the C minor that it is and spending a lot of time in the happier, warmer, relative major key of E flat major.
It's true.
It's hard to even tell that this is happening because it's so smooth. Nothing special about this, but it's just a nice little example of the duality that composers use for those two keys.
Yeah, I mean, it starts at C minor. And then the ending of that phrase goes into an E flat major feel, but then in the second line, back to C minor, or a dominant chord. Then you get third and fourth line the same. And the fifth line, it's a little bit more tending completely toward E flat major. The sixth line, also. So in a way, it's kind of feeling like it's going to resolve major. But then, in the seventh line, we have those chords that lead us, specifically the F major and G major that lead us back to C minor. So, seven lines, which is also a nice number. And if you know the Nun Freut Euch, you know that that's also seven lines, which is why it fits this meter.
Yeah, seven is a great number of phrases because it's always delightful to me when something is not four or eight in music. It's just nice to have something a little different.
Yeah, there's something about that seventh line hitting a little differently when it ends because you just go, oh, that's it? Interesting.
Or it feels like an extra one after the sixth, you know.
Yeah, but as I said here, it brings us back to the C minor, so it actually kind of...
But it has to be, yeah. The sixth one ends in E.
Yeah, you couldn't do that, yeah. Major. Also, every melodic phrase, all one through six lines, always ends on the note G, which is interesting. And only the last one ends on the tonic C. Mm-hmm. Another very pleasing thing about this delightfully simple piece of music.
Here is the final verse of this hymn. If this episode about this musical moment has inspired you to hear the whole thing, it's pretty short, so go for it. Please see the link in the episode description to hear it. Use your podcast app to find us, or YouTube, whatever you use.
Okay, Christian, what's up next week for A Moment of Bach?
Next week, we look at the Goldberg variations. We've only looked at one variation so far. So here's, I'll say, my favorite one to play. Variation 7, the jig. Let's call it the canary jig.
Until next time, enjoy those moments.